Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 57 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined with co-host Steve, and we're going to cover this week's nerd news. First, we're going to cover what we just finished wrapping up was the Golden Globes and our thoughts on some of the winners and speeches and everything that took place there. Then we've got some good news coming out of video game streaming with $2.3 million raised for St. Jude's charity. Kevin Feige teases that the first trans superhero will be featured in one of the upcoming Marvel movies. We also have news on WandaVision getting moved up to 2020. And then some more video game news with the health of daughters being leaked positively with playing video games with their parents. And then in tech news, we're going to talk about the California Privacy Act that went into effect January 1st. We also have some copyright issues with some medical devices. And some controversial talk around this Iran conflict and where it intersects with tech. A lot to get through. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
Welcome back, nerds, to episode 57 of the Nerd Cantina Show. And it is Sunday, January 5th, as we're recording this, as I'm sitting in a hotel out on some travel right now. And I stepped in, caught the back end of the Golden Globes. I know, Steve, you were watching it. Let's give some quick thoughts on some of the winners and the event itself.
Yeah, I watched it live. And basically, to start off, Ricky Gervais is just...
I don't know how savage. They keep inviting... Like, he even jokes about, like... I just don't get why they let him into these things.
He is a fucking savage. Like, Tim Cook is sitting at the table 20 feet from him and then has no problems telling him flat out that he has sweatshops in China. Like calls him a hypocrite.
Well,
right,
and he also said
face.
The same thing about like, Disney or whatever else. And you know Bob Iger sitting there. You know him sitting there. Like
they're all right there. They're all right there, or they're watching. And he gives no shit, man. Like
he essentially likens all of those companies directly to ISIS, essentially saying that if ISIS had a movie studio, all of these public policy promoting liberals would still go and work for them because they're in it for is the paycheck and they don't really care. Because if any of them cared, they would care about the sweatshops ran by Apple, the poor practices held by Disney and other things that they're doing. But no, they don't care because they write the checks.
Yeah, it's so funny just to have somebody just have the balls to call it how he sees it and especially take some of these actors down a peg. You know, a lot of them do need to be taken. Didn't stop any of them from going up there and saying what they had to say. They were virtually unfazed by Ricky's words. but at least, you know, he says what a large portion of the viewing audience is thinking. You know, I watched the show just because I've seen a lot of these movies or reviews on a lot of these movies. I wanted to know, how they stacked up against the criticisms of Hollywood, and check out some of these new TV shows. You know, I find a lot of the shows I missed through these award ceremonies. You know, that's how I found Miss Maisel. She won her first award after the first season. I was like, what the fuck's this Miss Maisel show? You know, it ends up being one of my favorite
finished,
shows to
I just
watch.
I got caught up with that.
So, yeah, I mean, that's how good it is. You pounded out, like, you don't have time for much. And somehow you pounded out three
like
seasons
weeks,
of Miss Maisel in like a week and a half. You know, but yeah, it's fun to see somebody call him out like that, you know. And then we just got back to business
as
usual.
I mean, still some of his jokes were great. The like the Epstein joke. Was phenomenal. Yeah. It's just
and I love how they pan to the audience when the jokes land. You just get to see like Tom Hanks cringe. it's definitely worth watching, man. It's worth watching just for that shit, and that's why they get them. Is they know damn well that people are going to tune in to watch Ricky's jokes. They're
I was
going
to say,
YouTube
but feel free to skip the award ceremony and just watch the 8 minutes on YouTube because that's what I did. I just watched his monologue and really missed the vast majority of the award show. But it is for a reason. I mean, you know, I sent you the text when I first turned it on, and I turned it on in the middle of You said it was Michelle Williams' acceptance speech. It is just that, you know, whatever, they take it their opportunity for the public platform to really push specific policies and things that they're invested in. Cool. I don't care. Like, I just want to know who wins and see some funny jokes.
Yeah. I mean, in a 24-hour news cycle, you know, when we're just flooded with notifications on our phone of who tweeted what last, sometimes you just want a break. You know, sometimes I just want a break. So I love going to the movies and enjoying a lot of these things. It's just because you get to really shut off that part of the brain for a couple hours. And, you know, I miss the days when award ceremonies were actually people thanking the people that put them in those positions, cracking a few jokes because it's a fun time. It's supposed to be a party, and then going on your way. But now, I mean, Russell Crowe wasn't even there, and he had some climate change speech to hand to Jennifer Aniston to give. Like, talk about awkward. Like, can you imagine being Jennifer Aniston on stage and like, y'all really gonna make me read this? Like Russell Crowe, he's in Australia. He don't even have to deal with this. Like, I'm gonna have to be the one to preach everybody about climate change now. Thanks, Russell.
Yeah, dick. I mean, the truth is, I don't get too upset about this because I know it's going to be there. Like, I just shouldn't watch if I want to stay away from it. I devil's advocate it, I get it. Like, you know, Michelle Williams was, you know, the one example I brought up earlier. Well, I don't follow her on Twitter. I don't know what her public policies are. And the vast majority of the people watching don't know what she... So this is her opportunity to get a greater reach than the people that already live in her support. Yes, I understand it. You're passionate about these things. This is the time. Like, we would have the same criticism with people who live in the public eye, have this platform, and do nothing to further their social policies or to benefit humanity or whatever else. So we'd have the same criticism if they didn't. So there's no way to win.
I don't know. I don't know if it's the same, because I mean, there's plenty of celebrities and athletes who don't say shit about shit, and I am mad at them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm mad at them.
But if as a whole, you know, none of them stood up. There's
plenty of people.
We would criticize it. I mean, there have been good public figures that have taken their fame and done good things with it. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, and it's like anything. If you pick a side, there's two sides. You know, you're either going to fully support everything they say and love the speech, or you're going to be either indifferent or against it and just kind of, you know, doesn't sit right with you in some kind of way. So the minute you choose a side, you're doomed to upset or you know, make someone uncomfortable. You're only going to have the people that agree with you kind of support you on those ends. So, you know, the minute you choose a side, you be ready for the repercussions and be ready for the praise.
Well, we all suck.
You
know? And I mean, we're all horrible.
Yeah, we're all horrible humans. I've come to terms with that. I'm a horrible human. I recycle though. I do.
All right. Well, let's move out of our kind of commentary here on the
social stances social commentary.
I guess some of the winners that we're impressed with or agree, disagree with.
Well, like I said, I watch a lot because I go to these movies and I review them. One thing that I've vocalized, I've been stressed out about is that 1917 came out in limited theaters on Christmas. I finally was able to find a theater to go see it on this Friday night. So I'm going to review it this Friday. But it won like 3 awards, and it's like I've been trying to see this goddamn movie, like and he even said something about that in his speech. He was, you know, after they won Best Picture, and he said, you know, we came out on Christmas and limited viewings. He's like, now that we won this award, I'm hoping people will go out and see it. We release nationally on Friday, you know, like, please go see my movie. it's good. They gave me this big globe thing for it. I mean,
like, this is part of like the arbitrary deadlines and stuff for the award season, right? They had to have it released by a certain date. They weren't going to get a mass release because, you want to know what? Star Wars was eating up all of that box office space, and they put it in a point where, like, oh, we want to get into the award season. but we can't get the space. So, okay, we'll do limited release. So, I mean, they hurt themselves in that regard or benefited, right? Either way you want to look at it. They hurt the initial opening weekends by having limited release, but they're going to benefit because now they get the publicity of winning the Golden Globe.
Well, and like what doesn't sit well for me is like now, I mean, I guess it works well for them if you think about it. Like it beat Joker. Like it beat Joker for best movie and I can't even go see it yet. So I wanted to see it before, but now I'm like, all right, motherfucker. So now my expectation level just kind of like shot up, which could work well for the movie or not so well. Cause I try to go into these movies with like no expectation level or a proper expectation level, but they just fucked that all up. Like by winning this Golden Globe, because now I'm gonna walk in Friday. Like, let's see the movie that beat Joker.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see it. It looks like a very, very interesting cinematography that they've done with that movie. You know, it could be an interesting story. I don't really know.
Well, and out of all the war movies, World War One doesn't get much love now. I mean, everyone goes to Two or Nam. You know, like those are the ones that everybody goes to, especially because America had such a, you know, a presence in those wars. But World War One, you don't see too many movies made about. So I'm interested to maybe learn a few things about the First World War. You know, if it wasn't for a band, I wouldn't remember the dude who shot the guy.
But yeah, so I mean that one was a surprise, but Joker still did take a couple awards, winning for obviously Joaquin winning, and he said things on stage. You couldn't hear it if you were listening to the live broadcast because
couldn't stop swearing
and getting bleeped out the whole damn time. He did get some jabs in there about how weird he is and climate change in between the swear words.
And the fact that, you know, you forget that they serve dinner and drinks at these things, and they had an all plant-based meal. That's what he said in his speech, is he commended the award ceremony for addressing agriculture practices in the effects of climate change. So mass farming, these cows and pigs and everything. He was like, you know, I applaud the award ceremony for having a plant-based meal and addressing the effects of animals and on the climate change.
As the resident vegan, I'm gonna say good work.
Yeah, fuck you. Yeah. Go eat an impossible burger.
And he did criticize everybody about, words are nice and donating money is nice, but maybe you should take less private jets.
Yeah, you're going to get on your private jet. You fucking hypocrites. So even everybody's got to get up there, say their piece. You know, Joaquin just does it in a quirky, fun, vulgar way. Which, I mean, anybody that swears on live television, I'm all down for. I think we really need to desensitize ourselves from curse words.
Yeah. As far as surprises, I don't think there were too many major surprises. Chernobyl won some awards, it being a the phenomenal miniseries or whatever else. They won a fair amount. Trying to go through and remember Fleabag. Have you watched that yet?
I've watched the first two episodes, and it is a little bit of British comedy, so it doesn't hit as well as the American comedy usually hits me. But in the first opening scene is just a few jokes about anal sex right from the jump off. Like you're 3 minutes in and this chick's sitting on a bed talking about taking it in the pooper, and you can't like... You're like, oh, so where do we go from here? You know, like, really sets the tone for how this show is going to go. And, I haven't gotten back to it yet, but I intend to now, because I think they wrapped up after three seasons. It's okay. Three seasons and done. So, but yeah, I have limited time. I still haven't finished watching The Witcher, so it's hard to get to. But I remember putting it on the first time and instantly... she goes on this anal sex bit, and you're just like, wow, like we're right out the gate, like we're, this is where we're at. Okay.
You know, I know, you know, you're a fan at least of the acting of Once Upon a Time. You get Brad Pitt wins, you know.
Brad Pitt wins, and rightly so. I think he deserved it. Hollywood obviously hates Leonardo DiCaprio. Like they hate this dude. I mean, I saw Once Upon a Time, and I saw Rocket Man. And I'm sorry, man, Leo, his performance shit all over Taron Egerton. Like, I mean, I guess because Taron had to sing and had to sing Elton John songs that everybody knew, and he couldn't like butcher it too bad. But like, as I loved Bohemian Rhapsody, I didn't love Rocket Man in the same way, because Rocket Man was more Broadway musical, to whereas Bohemian Rhapsody was like a biopic. I felt like I learned about Queen after I saw that movie, and I didn't feel like I learned anything with Rocket Man. It was entertaining to a point, but it was very Broadway musical-ish. His performance was good. Like, I'm not trying to take anything away from Egerton, but Leonardo DiCaprio put on a fucking clinic.
Yeah.
With Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like, we're talking 5 to 10 minute uncut single shot scenes of just dialogue, where this dude just has you gripped to the screen. Like I couldn't believe that Leo didn't win that.
I was just cheering for rooting for Dolomite as one of the few movies I've actually seen on Netflix, but it's incredibly entertaining. Eddie Murphy's the man.
I heard he made a great movie with that.
And the cast is great. The storytelling is incredibly interesting, as far as talking about that character of Dolomite and really what it did for like blaxploitation films back in the day. Really an interesting movie. Like, you should watch it on Netflix. I think you really enjoy
it. I've seen a few things on the making of it and things like that, and it has piqued my interest. I will get around to it. I just haven't had the chance yet. One of the surprise wins was, I think it was for the best actor in a TV drama or TV musical kind of drama, because they switched it. They separated now, musicals and comedies and dramas. I think he won it in drama, but that Rami, the lead actor from the show about him, Rami, I've never seen the show, and from what he kind of let on in his speech, not many other people have either. Like, he got up there and instantly thanked Muhammad, you know, which you could tell made a portion of the audience a little uncomfortable. And then you see him like pick up on that after he says Allahu Akbar, and you see him like scan the room and realize that like nobody knows who he is. Nobody's seen his show. And he's like, all right, folks, I know nobody's seen my show. I just want to thank for getting this award, bringing some light to it. We made this show basically for a very small audience, so I don't expect any of you to see it. I just think this is kind of cool. And like, just totally like nonchalantly just was like, hey, fuck it. It is what it is. Sorry about it. Like, because he beat out some good people. I can't remember offhand who he beat out, but I remember when they were doing the nominees, I was like, oh, okay. Some tough competition. And then that dude won. I was like, who?
Yeah, I mean, he beat out Michael Douglas. He beat out Bill Hader for Barry, which I've watched some Barry, which is a great show. The Politician, I haven't watched that. Ben Platt from that. But Paul Rudd with Living With Yourself, which was really well done on Netflix. Yeah, he beat out some good current shows out there.
Yeah, I'll have to watch the pilot at least now. You know, that's the thing, is you watch these award shows. The fact that they gave it to him, it's piqued my curiosity enough to give him an hour of my life.
Yeah. Well, I think we covered enough Golden Globes here for the day, but we'll see kind of what this shapes out. You know, Golden Globes is always good.
It's always a lead into the Oscars.
Emmys and Oscars, and we'll talk more as far as what we think they get wrong there. But to keep it in movies, let's shift over to some Marvel Disney talk here. And first one up is, Kevin Feige teased this week that the first trans superhero is is coming in one of these upcoming Marvel movies. Most of the speculation is saying that's going to be in the Eternals, because really that's the only Marvel movie in production currently. So what the hell else is he talking about?
But they said they also said it may be a while. Like, so I don't think it's any movie in post-production or even in production right now. I think they're just hashing out that they want to do a transgender character, and they're just going to insert it in some movie that comes out in 2023, 2024.
So I think the Eternals timeline makes sense. The fact that the Eternals cast is so large that you could very easily do it. Most of those characters are pretty unknown, right? So people aren't going to be outraged if you take one of those characters and you change kind of who they are, because none of them are Iron Man. None of them, like, that whole cast of Eternals could just pretty much make it up, and 90% of the people are just going to go with it. So I think Eternals makes sense. And really what he was talking about was that he's got a character that is married, he's got a family, and he's gay, and talking about it being a male character that's trans. So it's, we'll see. I think it's, I don't know. I look forward to the day we see.
I have a little bit of confusion, like, in this subject brings it up. I worked at a Chicago nightclub downtown for a long time. I have trans friends. I still talk to a few of them. I always thought the goal for, like, a trans woman, you know, a man who transitioned into a woman, I always thought the goal was to be a woman, like, just live in society as a woman, not be identified as a trans woman. Because the minute you put that trans in front of it, you're now part of, like, a subclass. You're identifying who you used to be. Like, if Marvel's going to make a trans character, why announce it? Just have a trans person in the movie. And do you see what I mean? Like, why we have to bring, if the main goal is integration into society by making these public announcements and by doing these things, you will never fully integrate. You will never fully immerse in the sense that I think, you know, and I could be wrong.
I think,
you know,
someone could at me. Representation is ultimately good. And the problem is, you know, if you stick strictly to that definition, then it ends up just not really looking like necessarily representation in the film. Like, you know, maybe a real person, a real trans actor is playing that role, but it's not apparent on the screen. So I could see trying to make it a little more obvious. I just hope it's done in a way that it's not playing up some tropes, not playing up some, you know, crazy stereotypes.
That's my fear. That's what I'm trying to figure out, is why not just do it and not announce it? It's like charity, you know, like, are you really donating to charity if you have to make the social media post that you donated to charity? Like, isn't charity just supposed to be done? Like, so the same thing with, like, if you're going to put people of minorities of certain groups into your movies, just put them in the movie and let everything be organic, and let's get to a society where all of this is just part of the norm.
Yeah.
But as long as you're like, hey, over here, look over here, we're putting this trans person in our movie, go enjoy it. And it's now it's like,
I still think when you're doing firsts and stuff like that, and the first one in this type of movie, and the first one,
but we're, I don't think we're not at the first, especially since after Orange is the New Black, the Amazon show Trans has won awards. Like, I think we're getting past the point of it being something that needs to be
nothing
called out.
Nothing billion-dollar blockbuster type movie. Nothing playing in really a lead featured role in something. So it still is kind of a first. And I think, like I said, I think representation is good. And we're naturally going to make a big deal of the first ones. I'm just looking forward to the day when it's mundane and it's really just a piece of somebody's backstory that nobody has to really dissect or talk about anymore. That sexuality is just what it is. It's mundane. It's like skin color. Who the hell cares?
Yeah, I mean, because that's what I think when I see these headlines is Marvel to put first trans, you know, person in the Marvel movie. And I'm just like, not that I don't care about the trans community, but I'm just like, cool story, bro.
Yeah.
Like, just do it. Just yeah, do it. Just, like, just I don't give a fuck. Just do it. Just tell a good story. I don't give a fuck. You know, so anytime I see these headlines, I'm just waiting for a time in our society where it's just not a headline.
Yeah.
Like, just do it.
But I think, again, promoting blockbuster representation is the first step to that. So I don't have an issue with them making these.
And I might be ignorant to that point, you know, because I am a cis white male and you know, no one cares about my opinion on these things anyways. But yeah, I mean, from the trans people I talk to, a lot of it is a bit much, you know, that they do just want to be looked as a female in society and don't have a giant arrow over their head at all times saying, look at me, identify, you know.
Yeah.
Like, so I talked to some of those friends of mine and I wonder, like, are we slowing down the process of acceptance by constantly calling out these things, you know, or is it actually helping normalize it and whatnot? I don't know.
Yeah. When in doubt, just watch Dave Chappelle's latest stand-up and just realize that none of us can talk about this as well as he can make jokes about this. Next up in the Marvel world is that WandaVision. The WandaVision show has been moved up. A firm release date hasn't been published, or not one that I've seen, but it has been moved up on the calendar from 2021 to 2020. And some say this is because of like the success of The Mandalorian. I tend to say that this might be because of the failure of Disney Plus's original content.
Yeah, I think they're now that The Mandalorian's wrapped up, I think they're going to be hurting for original content because you can only watch, you know, especially if you got kids, that content's going to get ran through. I can't tell you how many. She's already gone through the Vampirina season like 3 times. I've watched Star Wars Rebels like all the way through. I've watched all the original. Like, I'm starting to hit a point where like I'm not going to have too many more shows to pound out on this app. I'm going to be on it less and less.
Yeah.
I mean, my 1-year-old watches Mickey Mouse Clubhouse religiously, but.
Yeah, I don't spend a lot of time on Disney Plus at all. I have watched a couple of episodes of the Jeff Goldblum show just because.
Dude
cracks me up.
Fantastic weirdo. Like, yeah. Man, he is just such a fantastic weirdo. He cracks me up,
so that's a good thing to have in the background while I'm doing something else just because he's funny. But Mandalorian, and really that's. That's about it. My kids have watched a couple things, but I think we watched some Christmas movies on there. But
yeah, I get the kids watching Rebels, man. Star Wars Rebels.
I do. But that's, I mean, really, that's it. So they lack in original content. You know, a lot of people are saying to cancel the subscription once Mandalorian was done, and honestly, I could say that's justified.
I don't blame you.
They didn't roll out with a strong original content. Yeah, they rolled out, I think, with the right show for original content. The Mandalorian, like, was the right show to have on launch. But you probably needed to have a couple other ones.
But when they started filming The Mandalorian, why weren't they filming 4 other shows, 3, you know, to come out with this?
They don't only need to exist in Star Wars and Marvel.
No, like, that's what I mean.
They didn't even really have other valuable shows that just have other original plots that have.
Yeah, anything. give me a family rom-com or something like that. Just that Disney owns. Like, it doesn't have to be even Disney, like traditional characters or Disney Marvel or Star Wars.
Or Fox, but all of Fox. They own Fox. Like, there's so much out there. So yeah, they are weak starting out. So yeah, I think this move to 2020 is really just in response.
I'm wondering. I mean, it could also have something to do with their movie release schedule that they need the show because the show ties in with some of these movies. That they need the show to have aired by a certain point in order for something to make sense in a movie they plan on releasing shortly after. There could be a couple of other reasons, but I do think the lack of original content on Disney Plus is the main driver.
Yeah, same. So we'll see what turns out with that. But The other news with Disney Plus is that, you know, there's articles that talk about like what shows they're losing. And that's just a weird thing, again, talking about their original content. Even their owned content, they still don't have a firm grasp of all of it. And this is just comes down to kind of this weird, the intricacies of all of these streaming contracts or whatever else, that even though Disney owns these things, they still have farmed out the rights to a lot of other streaming services like Netflix. So they're losing some of the movies that they had on at original. They're still waiting to gain access to some of the other ones that are still with the other services. So you may not find some of the shows you're looking for, or movies that you're looking for, still in Disney Plus for some time.
Yeah, it'll be a few years for some of these licensing rights to wrap up on a lot of these properties. You know, streaming's very still kind of in its birthing stages, even though we've had it for what seems like a long time. But really, there's only a few players now. I mean, did you see the Peacock commercials during the Golden Globes?
No.
They're starting to advertise the Peacock app. And it's a very weird and awkward commercial too. It's just like a brown egg and a white egg in a nest, and they just like zoom in on it, and then all of a sudden there's a spotlight on the egg, and it's like, something's hatching soon, and it's like Peacock streaming, blah blah blah. Oh, and instantly my mind, when I seen it, I'm waiting for the articles tomorrow. I'm a Nostradamus this right now. In the preview, they have a brown egg and a white egg next to each other in the nest, and then the spotlight comes on only one egg. Take a guess which egg it comes on.
Bitch.
take a fucking guess of what egg.
They definitely highlighted the white egg.
And then the minute I seen it, I said, oh shit, somebody gonna be mad.
Yeah.
Shit, somebody gonna be mad. Like, how are there not white people in a boardroom that notice this shit? Like, how am I the only one that sees this and can predict the fucking headline tomorrow morning?
You got to think there had to have been somebody who saw that and thought,
or a black dude in a meeting that rolled his eyes and didn't say nothing.
that is good. Well, we'll have to definitely go find a link to that or something. before it disappears.
For sure, I'm waiting for the headline tomorrow morning, man. I'm telling you. I might write it right now myself.
All right. Well, coming out of TV, we've got some other entertainment talk on video games. And this is a good story that found. So apparently a streamer, Dr. Lupo, I don't really watch video game streams. It would just give me some anxiety and kind of FOMO, since I don't get the game myself. I'm not gonna watch somebody else's game. But Dr. Lupo is a major streamer, and he held his second 24-hour stream, where he did 24 hours. People could like donate money and send in questions or suggestions or whatever else during his gameplay. He did this through Fortnite, and during his 24-hour stream, he raised $2.3 million for St. Jude's.
Which, man, that's amazing. That's a huge, huge number. And I love to see people in our nerd culture community using, you know, their time and efforts to do things like this. And I think that number, 2.3 million, shows that the video game community, not just the developers, you know, and the players and the streamers, but the entire community, aren't just a bunch of fucking wastoids, as the boomers would call us.
Not all of them.
You know, but I mean, yes, you're always going to have, people that make every group look bad. But for the most part, man, gamers are good people. Yeah. They, you know, it's a form of entertainment. Everybody has their own form of entertainment. Doesn't mean they don't care about the world. Doesn't mean they don't care about what's going on. So to see that a streamer raised, you know, 2.3 million for a really good cause, it's kind of awesome.
Yeah, he Dr. Lupo, he even said in this article, he's quoted saying that my goal has always been to help people. I'm a normal guy who loves to play video games. And because of this amazing community, that passion has grown. It's something much bigger than gaming. And we're here helping to save kids' lives. And I mean, it is a cool thing. Like, you know, that's, again, if you get a platform, if you're just a guy who likes to play video games and it has turned into this fame that you never really could have seen coming, yeah, leverage that and turn that into a net positive for society.
So there's an article that I've seen today that I didn't send to you. And it is a little relevant to this and quite funny. But there was an Instagram model who made $100,000 for Australian fire relief by selling $10 nudes.
I'm trying to do the math of how many nudes that is right now. It's 10,000. Yeah, that's simple math. 10,000. I'm still dumb.
10,000. Hey, no, it's one decimal place, pal.
I got it. I'll edit that out.
Again, a creepier community, although philanthropic. It's as philanthropic as it can be. Raised $100,000. You know, and if this is the future of philanthropy, playing video games and sending nudes.
All right.
Man, I ain't mad, bro. Yeah. I ain't mad. I ain't mad.
If we can make
the world a better place with gamers and boobs, like,
I just want to know. I just want to know what came on that $10 receipt that somebody was turning into their accountant for their tax write off on that.
Well,
charity.
the way she did it is you had to donate to one of the five causes she put on a list. Send her your receipt, and then she would DM you a nude.
I mean, all right.
like man, it's just such, like, because, you know, I'm an 80s baby. I grew up in a way different time. And to think of the world we live in now just, like, blows my mind. I would have never... You told 15-year-old Steve, hey, one day people are going to be raising tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars for all kinds of great causes by playing a video game or sending people pictures of their boobs. I told you you're fucking crazy. I'm like, you're fucking crazy, dude. There's no way this is going
to
exist.
Yeah, that is... It's a crazy time we live in, but kudos to Twitch, who put on that event, and it got to $2.3 million with a $1 million donation by Twitch itself. He raised $1.3 million off of 16,000 individual donors, and then Twitch gave him $1 million donation themselves. So,
well, good for Twitch too.
Yep. So good things all around. While we're talking about video games, we got one more article here, and that's, there's an article on, what is it, thedad.com, citing some research studies that say that playing video games with your daughter may be good for their overall health, mental health, and happiness. All right. Cool. We can cherry pick some science and support playing video games with daughters.
I'll take any good news when it comes to that. I have two daughters. My daughter loves to play Spyro and Overcooked. I do game with my daughter. I got myself a Switch, so I gave her my 3DS, and it was a very short time period before she got really good at Mario Kart. from driving into walls in the wrong way on the track in a matter of days to having all the gold medals on the trials. And I was just like, damn, like, okay, okay. I'm just waiting for her to challenge me on the 64 downstairs. And I'm going to have to pull Wario out and lay the smackdown on my 5-year-old.
Yeah. Well, the study, I always question this kind of science. It's cool to, it's a cool headline. I'll save it somewhere to throw in my wife's face someday when she wants to stop me from playing the games. But the study specifically looked at 280 families, and it was really focused on the ages 11 to 16, and showed that happiness and mental health, overall happiness and mental health, and like bonds of the family were improved for girls. The same study also said they were degraded with boys playing games, and it was
I think it has something to do with the competition between men and the testosterone. Like with women, I think it's a bonding experience. You know, it's something that they look at as like a positive. You know, it's more of like a bonding thing. To whereas father son, it's a rivalry thing. And I will never forget playing, I think it was probably Madden 94. Like, it was when they first put in like the all-time teams, and I would pick all-time Bears and make dad pick some schmuck team, and I would play them, and I figured out the onside kick glitch for Madden 94, and I literally played an entire game with him. He didn't touch the ball once. And like our father was tended to be an angry person. I don't think I ever made him matter. Like, and he came home and busted like parties with me with cases of beer in the fridge on LSD and was enraged. I don't think I ever made him matter than playing him in Madden and not letting him touch the ball once through an onside kick glitch. Like, I see that like men thing, you know, why it would be different with fathers and sons to fathers and daughters.
I say that this is like cherry picking headlines out of garbage science on this website, just because the science doesn't sound, it's really not very controlled. And it, like I said, it's looking at these families of a pretty wide age range of 11 to 16. It talks about like the girls are playing games like Guitar Hero and Mario Kart while the guys are playing Call of Duty, right? It's just, they're drastically different game types, drastically different appropriateness, like as far as maturity level within these games.
And I read another study this week that said, this isn't really gamer or nerd related, but it was obesity in mothers during pregnancy had a effect on cognitive function and IQ in sons. So they did like, so if your mama was fat during pregnancy and she had a boy, you're a little dumber than if she was skinny and she had a boy, or if you had a sister, because they found that it was only in boys that there was no, they tested the boys at age 3 and age 7. And the boys that had mothers that were obese during pregnancy were a few IQ points lower and weren't as coordinated as the boys that mothers weren't obese. And they tested the same kind of like group with women, and there was no effect with the daughters. None whatsoever. it makes you wonder, like, well, what other controls were there? You know, what diets were these kids eating? Yeah. Like,
it's just junk science. This is why a lot of these things, they exist just for headlines. So, like I said, if it's a positive argument for us,
we're gonna
take it. If this supports your argument, and you play more video games with your daughter, take it. But yeah, don't use this to treat depression or anything else, because it's not quite that.
But if you're looking to get down some Mario Kart with your kid, you can use this as an excuse.
All right. Well, let's move on to tech news here. We've got a few things going on in the tech space. First one being January 1st, the California Privacy Act took into effect, and that is, it's supposed to be data privacy. Companies now operating within California are supposed to disclose what they're doing with your data, how they're making money off your data, and you are supposed to be able to opt out of their ability to sell your data. It's not enforced, I think, for like another 6 months, but companies are already supposed to have measures for you to do this opting out and everything else. And that took place January 1st. I'm telling you right now, I spent 30 minutes right before we did this so I could talk about how to do it. I spent about 30 minutes playing around on Facebook. I couldn't figure out how to opt out. So I know it exists, and I know people who have gone and done it, and even asks you if you reside in California, because if you don't, technically you don't They don't have to give you the right to opt out.
And that's what I'm wondering is if, does this only apply to California residents? Does this apply to companies with a headquarters in California?
It only protects California residents right now. But we know how California tends to do these things. Then it strong arms everybody else to kind of fall in suit. But it didn't, the law, because it's only a state law, it didn't force them to make it, you know, a notification or something that they, that you have to do deliberately opt in or opt out. So they've buried it. Like I went through privacy settings. I went through a lot of different steps. I need to I'm going to have to go find a YouTube video on how to find these settings and opt myself out. As a resident of California, I can do that.
Yeah. If I could, I would tell them to get your hands off my data.
Or send me my check.
Send me my check, or you can't have it. That's how I always feel. It's not that I'm necessarily opposed to people using our data. You know, I really don't have anything to hide from anybody. So, but I don't feel it's a fair trade. That's been always my stance. So you wanna toss me some ducats? You can have it. If you don't, sorry about it, man. I'm gonna take my data and go home.
Yeah. So just wanted to bring up the fact that this law is in effect. So you might see some changes. And if you really want to look into opting out, there's ways that you're supposed to be able to do this on Twitter, or on Facebook, on any really US based company that sells data. You're supposed to be able to opt out of these things. You just might have to either live in California or state that you live in California. And then somewhere probably in the future, we'll see similar laws get passed federally as what oftentimes happens once one state does this. So,
which kind of leads into a next story, how your glucose readings are not even your own private information. This blows my mind.
Yeah, so I like to follow Boing Boing. We had Cory Doctorow on the show, who was one of the founders of Boing Boing, and they're just a big digital advocacy group. If for any of you don't know, go to boingboing.net, sign up for their email subscription list. As they just kind of they're advocates that for our rights as consumers in the digital marketplace. And what they've highlighted is Abbott Labs, who sells a diabetic glucose meter, glucose readings. They are now claiming that it's copyright infringement for companies to use or to gather and collect the glucose readings, and stating that it violates their copyrights. So you as a consumer, if you were a diabetic, so let's say you're a diabetic and you had an insulin pump in your body. Well, those insulin pumps are regulated by software. And if there were programs on GitHub or whatever else that you could put into those devices that link to the glucose meters that then helped better regulate the pump, well, Abbott Labs said, well, you using somebody else's device and using our readings to improve their device is a violation of our copyright. Even though it's your blood, it's your blood sugar levels, you can't use that data and give it to that other device. Interoperability violates our copyright law. So that's absolutely asinine. That just writing a piece of code that allows them to just aggregate data from another device is in some way a violation. And this goes into are these laws really protecting us as consumers and benefiting us? Oftentimes not.
That'd be Fitbit saying they own the rights to your weight. And if you wanted to integrate, your weight into your calorie counter app, you'd have to pay Fitbit money or...
But that's exactly what happens. So when we talk about interoperability, this does happen. So, Fitbit and everything else, they do have their own apps to track your nutrition or whatever else. And oftentimes they will say, hey, if you go to fatsecret.com's app or whatever app is out there and you want to link it to your Fitbit, it's not hard to write that code, but oftentimes Fitbit's going to block that interoperability and say, nope, that data that you're getting from that Fitbit tracker can only be used in our health
tracker. We're going to take the feature that dude wanted in your app and we're going to integrate it into our own app. Go fuck yourself, pal.
And that's where, we talked about it in the episode that we did with Cory Doctorow on adversarial interoperability, where these adversarial companies should be able to link and work together. That should not be a violation of copyright. That is an overextension of what the interpretations of copyright laws that blocks people from just writing simple pieces of code to utilize hardware from these other companies. You know, we're talking about the hardware of a glucose meter. That data should not be protected from benefiting an insulin pump. Somehow we've gotten to a point where it is, and individuals with diabetes who are relying on these devices now can't have them talk to each other, which means they're going to have lower health outcomes.
And it's a matter of principle, right? Or ethics too. I mean,
there's no ethics in money. Just, yeah. just make that money.
Yeah. It's sad, you know, that we've gotten to kind of like this point in capitalism where, you know, data is worth so much to these people that, like you said, you're building firewalls against people's health. You know, you're putting up walls and instead of saying, well, if this is going to make you a healthier person, sure. You know, you already gave us the money for the pump.
Right.
We already made our money off of you. But, you know, why it seems unethical for that same company to say, we want you to be healthy. Here's this glucose reader. Check your stats. Make sure you're a healthy person. And you say, okay, cool. I'm going to take the numbers from this reader and I'm integrated with this other app that's going to help me be even better at this. Be like, whoa, 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 whoa. Wait, you want to what now? Yeah, nah. So is it really about me being healthier or is it just about you trying to squeeze me for every penny that you possibly can?
Yeah, it's really, again, it's a boing boing as they continue to champion things like this and copyright laws. They're trying to fight the fight that this is an overextension of the copyright laws. So they're currently fighting to have this ruling overturned or to ensure that you know, legal precedent is set that this is not what copyright is meant to protect. Copyright is not meant to protect just the simple writing of some code to use data from one device to another. And we'll see what they're able to do there as these things take time to flesh out. But Boing Boing continue to do great things. So support them if you can just by joining their email list or give them a donation or whatever you can over there at boingboing.net. And then the last topic, real light one, as we're wrapping up here, and we'll keep it light, and that is Iran.
Jesus.
Definitely wanted to just how does Iran affect tech space? Well, it does in the sense of, you know, if you've been in a hole, you missed the fact that the Iran conflicts with our government have escalated over the last couple of days. By the time this comes out on Wednesday, it's probably going to be a completely different environment as we're recording this on Sunday. So if what I'm telling you right now is no longer relevant, that's just what happens in news cycles these days. But, you know, General Soleimani killed by U.S. airstrikes, which has caused some significant ripple effects and threats by Iran. And that's where it intersects with tech, is when Iran threatens this country. Everybody's talking about this going into World War III and this being some big conflict or whatever else. Iran's not that dumb. They're not going to come in. What are they going to do? Fly planes to our U.S. airspace? Nope. They're going to attack us on the ground.
Talk about their ballistic missile program on the news. Like, I'm worried about them shooting a missile over to, you know, here from Iran. Like, nah. Bro,
but what they do have,
pretty sure we got that covered,
is one of the most capable international cyber teams, cyber attack capabilities that any country has. So what was expected and published by the Department of Defense, urging companies, specifically companies in the realms of infrastructure and throughout the U.S. to shore up their security, to do some security analysis and ensure that they are prepared for potential cyber attack from Iran, because that's really where a lot of, again, DOD level analysis has come out saying that that's the greatest threat of any type of retaliation is in the cyber domain from a country like Iran. And then what we saw within 48 hours,
they showed their capabilities.
They showed like a parlor trick capability, but it still is, I guess, a capability. Hey. They did hack. Well, we don't know who hacked. Somebody claiming to be Iran-backed cyber group did hack a government website. It's a government website nobody's ever heard of, and it's the U.S. government library, which was like a repository of like historical documents and stuff like that. They hacked it, put up an image of like a bloodied face, Donald Trump getting punched in the face, and had some pro-Iranian writing on there, and essentially said like, we've now demonstrated our capability to you, claiming that it was Iran's government that did this. So, interesting.
I mean, like, I get it. It's a nothing of a website in the United States government, but you would still like to think that anything with a .gov had a certain level of security. I mean, if you're one of like 13 brothers and somebody picks on the smallest one of you, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, I get it. You picked on the runt of the family, but does it hurt any less to the family?
I don't know.
That they beat up the runt?
90% of the .gov websites you go to today still looks like a personal blog ran out of Windows 95. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, I mean, they're still just terribly ran websites that are probably using outdated firewalls or whatever else. Like, the government does not do this well, so it doesn't surprise me that it's one that don't care about.
It doesn't give me any faith in, you know, so okay, we got tax season coming up, mad people are going to be trying to e-file, operating systems such as like the DMV. You know, you don't have to try to hack like national security interests. You have Russian trolls just trying to cause chaos in American society to just anger us. You want to anger a bunch of fucking Americans? Shut down the DMV website for a fucking day. See how that fucking goes over with everybody. Like, that's kind of what fears me, is I don't think that Iran's going to hack the electrical grid or banking systems or anything like that. But yeah, like, if I'm going to try to renew my plates in the next couple weeks and I get to the DMV and they're just like, it's a madhouse and all the computers are down, like, yeah, you're going to have a lot of pissed off people roaming the streets, and that's not good for America.
Yeah. And I mean, that's where I think, you know, the greater threat is in these smaller websites, state run websites. I think Iran has capability, but I think Iran probably has capability greater than that if they choose to, knowing that that's an escalation that maybe they can't handle. But
Iran, Russia, and China were just running military drills together just this last week, and those are two allies that really like to meddle in American internet space. So yeah. Who knows what kind of teams they're building, you know, through those kinds of relationships that could wreak havoc on, you know, on our society. I'm not for any of this. I am not looking forward to the next coming weeks. It's all that's going to be talked about, which also plays into other political type strategies and things that are going on in our world.
Yeah, I didn't bring it up because I wanted to get overly political about it, but I just wanted to bring it up because I find it a very interesting intersection with what we care about in the space of tech, in the sense that, you know, this is the potential weak point or potential threat of any future conflict with any kind of nation state, is an immediate like warning to all companies that, hey, shore up your hey, Walmart, You might want to protect your sites. Facebook, you might want to protect your sites. Everybody who exists,
that's what I'm saying.
Protect,
like, man, all they have to do is a DDoS attack on the PlayStation Network or Xbox Live, and you're going to have a bunch of mad motherfuckers. You know, it doesn't, the hacking of military and infrastructure things doesn't worry me as much of just them causing random chaos in everyday American lives. You know, like just plain old dickhead cyber terrorism.
Yeah.
Like they could have a team of 30 motherfucking Iranians in a room swatting people. Like, bro, like I fear that shit more than anything. Like, man.
Yeah. I mean, that's, like I said, that's the interesting part. So hopefully people weren't too offended. We didn't go too political on our individual opinions on the handling of this, but it does intersect with tech.
Where nerd culture meets society. We said it before.
Yeah, we'll pay attention more to if any of these kind of hacking attempts are identified in the future, and we'll continue to point this out to everybody. So,
yeah, I'm gonna reach out to Mr. Clay at some point and see what's really good.
Yeah, and hear what some of these is. Since we've talked to him, we've known about. Yeah, New Orleans going down with the cyber attack and some other things. So there's probably some updates to be had by Bill.
Yeah, like I said, I don't know if it's because cyber attacks are getting more prevalent or just because we did that show and our phones heard us and now they're just sending us the stories in our new algorithm of what we care about.
Either way, it's fascinating. So, but that'll take us to the end here of episode 57 of the Nerd Cantina Show. So I want to say thanks again for listening to this week's news, and continue to support and subscribe.
Well, I'm excited. I'm actually going to go get to see that 1917 this Friday, so I'll have a new review up on YouTube and finally get to go see a movie I've been bitching about for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I'm going to catch at least one more movie on the flight home as now I get a couple of hours of uninterrupted time to waste. But
which movie did you pick on the way here?
Ad Astra. I went Ad Astra. So I enjoyed it. So
like I said, Space Odyssey meets Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
It was very, it reminded me very much of Apocalypse Now.
I watched Ad Astra and I watched the first like hour of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Damn, how long was that flight?
West Coast to East Coast.
Holy
Cali
shit.
Cali to Florida. Two flights. So, but yeah, go ahead and please subscribe in whatever player you're listening to. So that way you get these episodes in a timely manner and hopefully get them automatically downloaded so we can boost these numbers and continue to grow this show out. Join the conversations, continue these conversations over at the nerdcantina.com/community, which will take you to our closed Facebook group. And that group continues to grow week by week, and we're really enjoying the atmosphere that's being cultivated over there.
And if you're a new listener, don't forget to hit up the archives and check out some of our interview segments, the Cantina Conversations, as the news may be dated and you know, as we go by. I'm sure nobody wants to hear our thoughts on the casting of a movie that already came out, but the interview segments in our archives don't really have an expiration date on them. And if you haven't caught some of the interviews with like Cory Doctorow or Dr. Rachel Colwert or Bill Clay, these are some great interviews that really have no expiration that you guys should go back and listen to. So if you are new to the show, scroll down on that player and go find some of them older Cantina Conversations, some of the Fight Me Fridays, and give them a shot.
All right. Well, with that said, thanks again, nerds. Talk to you next week.